from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I guess I must have dreamed it. I guess I must have dreamed that he said trees cause air pollution. I guess I must have dreamed that the sunny optimist I'm hearing all about was the angry governor of California who presided over an armed attack on People's Park in Berkeley, in which apparently an innocent bystander was killed without any comment by the then governor. I guess I must have dreamed the fact that when United States troops, Marines in Lebanon, were ambushed by Muslim terrorists, our response was to pull out of Lebanon. So somebody learned some lesson sometime there. But I dreamed that. Anyway, that will be all the recollection of dreaming I'm going to do today, because the only real response, ladies and gentlemen, is to talk about other things. And there are other things to talk about. Oddly enough, the world is spinning. But I guess I must have dreamed it. Hello, welcome to the show.
No one likes us. I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one and see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and they're hateful. They don't respect us, so let's surprise them. We'll drop the big one and pulverize them. The Asia's crowded, Europe's too old. Africa's far too hot and Canada's too cold. South America stole our name. Let's drop the big one, there'll be no one left to blame us. We'll save Australia. Don't wanna hurt no kangaroo. We'll build an all-American amusement park there. They got surfing too. Boom goes London, boom Paris. More room for you and more room for me. In every city, the whole world round, will just be another American town. Oh, how peaceful it will be. We'll set everybody free. Wear a Japanese kimono, baby, be Italian shoes for me. They all hate us anyhow. So let's drop the big one now. Let's drop the big one now.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes. My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes. 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 I'm pleased to tell you today that 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 I'm
I'm pleased to tell you today that outlaw Russia forever. Outlaw Russia forever. Forever. We begin bombing in five minutes.
Sound of the 80s. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the show. I guess I must have dreamed that he thought he was there when they liberated the concentration camps. Hello, welcome to the show. I'm a good dreamer, you know? That's some rich material. Ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble, because we've been bubblicious this week. We've had so much on our own plates. A few things have missed our gaze, don't you know? Like this, an arrest warrant has been issued for Ahmed Chalabi's right-hand man in Baghdad, the American consultant Francis Brooke. He tried to stop the recent raid on Chalabi's headquarters in the Iraqi capital. In the latest in a series of damaging blows for Mr. Chalabi, an Iraqi judge said that Brooke had obstructed the Iraqi police. Ooh, that's a serious charge there. He's believed to have returned to Washington. Hey, welcome, babe. He stopped the raid. He didn't stop the parade. He stopped the raid by telling the police they didn't have the legal power to do the raid because he was an American and they were Iraqis, said Judge Zuhair al-Maliki of the Baghdad Central Criminal Court. As a result, the raid didn't go as planned. The warrant is for interfering with the work of the Iraqi police. Brooke, who is, this is from the London, I believe the London Telegraph, a conservative newspaper, which points out that Brooke is an evangelical Christian who worked with Mr. Chalabi since 1990, first as a consultant, paid by the CIA, thank you very much, and most recently as a consultant for a company run by a Republican Party veteran, Charlie Black. Brooke acted as an intermediary between Washington and Tehran, passing letters between the two governments. He could not be reached for comment, although a colleague in Baghdad said the arrest warrant was part of a politically motivated campaign to discredit Chalabi and his followers. Brooke has boasted of engineering the war in Iraq by providing America the evidence it was seeking on weapons of mass destruction. This is while Chalabi, guy he works for, has denied responsibility for that evidence. I'm a smart man, he told the New Yorker magazine last week. I saw what they wanted, and I adapted my strategy. Among the records held by Chalabi in his Baghdad headquarters, which were stripped during the raid, he claimed to have material relating to the oil for food program run by the United Nations during Saddam's rule. Last night, or the night before, it emerged that on the same day as the raid, computer files belonging to the British consultant who's investigating the oil-for-food scandal, apparently it's scandal-plagued, were destroyed by hackers, and a backup data bank in his Baghdad office were wiped out. That's weird. It's all weird, said the man who was doing the report on the oil for food scandal. This report would have been even more damning than anticipated. This would not sit comfortably with the political agenda in Washington and London, he says. This is a man named Charles Hanks Drieldsma. Hey, if the story doesn't get better, the names do. I believe that what Washington wants, Drieldsma says, is to keep the lid on things until after the presidential election. All right. Okay. Iraq will restore the death penalty after the return of sovereignty. That's what full sovereignty means. Well, that's what a year under American rule means. They're going to get the death penalty, in a measure which could affect ousted leader Saddam Hussein. This according to Iraqi Justice Minister Malik Dohan al-Hassan. We want to reinstate it for very specific cases, he said, ominously. The death penalty was suspended in Iraq by Tommy Franks in April 2003. So we taketh away and we giveth back. Iraq's governing council, which was supposed to be put on the back burner by Mr. Brahimi of the UN, instead apparently outflanked him in choosing the new interim government. Brahimi's goal was a technocratic government that it consisted of people who weren't going to run for office. But he was either outsmarted or out something else. And more apples, ladies and gentlemen, these damn apples. I pointed out before, it is the most mischievous of all fruit. And apparently, they multiply like rabbits. A Danish citizen today, or that's actually this weekend, said he was abused by U.S. troops in a military prison in Afghanistan in a similar way to Iraqi detainees in Abu Ghraib. He told a daily Danish newspaper's Sunday edition he was tortured in a prison camp in Kandahar in 2002 after being captured in Pakistan. He was later transferred to Guantanamo Bay, where he's held for 2 years. He's got an Algerian father and a Danish mother, said that soldiers in Afghanistan took pictures of him and made fun of his genitals while he was chained, hooded, and naked. I thought Lindy England taught them all to do that. The Americans did all to humiliate us. Why should we be naked in the middle of a tent? Why should they hit me and shave me against my religion? Because it was a psychological fight, he said. That's a very rough way to be shaved. Just right up against your religion. And more apples. The United States Army has reported 16 more criminal investigations into possible misconduct by U.S. soldiers against detainees and civilians in Iraq and Afghanistan. Those seeds, those apple seeds spread very far, don't they? Iraq and Afghanistan, that's a long way away for apple seeds to sprout. It's now 85, the number of inquiries by the Army's Criminal Investigation Division into detainee deaths and alleged assaults and thefts by U.S. soldiers over the past year and a half. Counting 22 other investigative actions by commanders in the field, the cases total 107, involving at least 111 Iraqis and Afghanis. Much of the rise reflects a surge in accusations by Iraqis and Afghanis after the prison scandal that widely publicized revelation encouraged others to come forward, says the official. Whether they involve recent incidents or ones that occurred some time ago could not be determined. At least one new death investigation is triggered by the killing of an Iraqi last month after a high-speed car chase not involving O.J. Simpson. What? I got O.J. on the mind. Ladies and gentlemen, he's back. O.J. is back. How do you do 2 exclusive television interviews? That's O.J. He was on Dateline on Friday night. He's on Fox News Channel, so-called, Monday night. Both billed as exclusives. That's a very special guy. He's now blaming his ex-wife for not being around to help with the kids. And says Fred Goldman, the father of Ron, who was killed with Nicole, got such opportunity from this with TV exposure. He also revealed he may get his own Practical Jokes reality show, a takeoff on MTV's Punk'd that may be called Juiced. These are excerpts from his interviews, his exclusive interviews, both with Fox and with Dateline. Not known yet how much they paid. A tabloid quoted OJ's attorney as saying, before these interviews appeared on the scene, it'll be expensive. TV rights are going for $100,000. Glanter even held out the possibility OJ might be willing to do a photo shoot at the Brentwood crime scene, but is quoted as saying it would have to be a multi-million type deal. A gravesite photo would be worth $500,000, he's quoted as saying. So is it any wonder I have OJ on the mind, ladies and gentlemen, with material like that? But here's something I didn't dream. President of the United States talking about a former president of the United States this weekend.
During the years of President Reagan, America laid to rest an era of division and self-doubt. And because of his leadership, the world laid to rest an era of fear and tyranny.
Tyranny, ladies and gentlemen. It's like irony, but worse. And now for an exclusive feature of this broadcast, Tales of Airport Security. Or tyranny is, I guess, where you're being brutalized by tires. I'm going to check that almost immediately. Dear Harry, on a recent trip returning from Ontario, California to Michigan, I was bringing home several food items that are not available in Michigan. Several canned products and a block of cheese. To help preserve the cheese, my friend wrapped it in aluminum foil with a small ice pack. At the airport, this assortment of items looked like a bomb to security under the X-ray. Once identified, we all had a good laugh and passed my luggage on. I continued upstairs to security. Normally, this would be no issue, but I have 9 inches of steel plus screws around my bone in my lower leg, so I know from other airports I will set off the metal detectors. When it came to be my turn, my laptop computer was carefully looked at, my shoes were scanned, and I even told them I had metal in my leg. I expected to hear the familiar tone of the alarm go off, but I heard nothing when walking through the gate. This shocked me and alarmed me a bit. I told the guard on duty that I have a large amount of metal in my leg and set alarms off across the country. He replied, "Well, not here, you didn't." Dear Harry, when I got to security, I handed my photo ID and boarding pass to the person. She studied it and handed it back, but she never looked at my face. So I turned around to watch. She never looked at anyone's face. I got to the bag machine and about to put my carry-on onto the belt, but it's time for the operator to take a break, so we stand there waiting for a bit. Another operator comes and starts the belt, and bags go through. But the whole time, he's looking at something off to the side and not at his two monitors. Dear Harry, I was flying out of Atlanta, and I was chosen for a secondary screening, which in Atlanta means putting your carry-ons on the belt and then being herded into a narrow stall with high plexiglass walls to wait for a screener. When I got to the front of the stall, which was roped off, a security person was there standing guard, making sure I didn't make a break for it. He said to me, "Your bag?" I looked at him blankly and said, "My bag what?" He was not pleased with this response and made it clear he was barely controlling his temper before saying, "Which bag is yours on the conveyor belt?" I replied, "It's the black backpack." He released me from the stall, and I was escorted to a screening area by another security person who had my bag in hand. She put my bag on a counter and wanded me and took my shoes to be x-rayed. While she was gone, Another security person came over, looked at my bag, and asked me if anyone had checked it. I said no. So he checked it. When the woman with my shoes returned, she simply handed me my shoes and sent me on my way. She did not ask about my bag or check it, nor had she seen the other gentleman checking it. It occurred to me I could have said my bag had been checked, and no one would have been the wiser. Dear Harry, coming home from Cairo via Frankfurt, I was passing through the security scanners, shoes off. Careful, I said to raised eyebrows all around. They stink, laughs all around. Meanwhile, my Swiss Army knife, clearly visible to me, passed unnoticed. Dear Harry, I recently flew to Europe on Swiss. Swiss prides itself on its gourmet meals and great service. I was therefore pretty surprised to find a sharp steel knife as part of my utensil set for dinner. On the same trip, I made use of one of the budget airlines to fly from Hanover, Germany to Stansted Airport near London. On my return trip, I found myself part of a large crowd of passengers waiting to be funneled through passport and security checkpoints. Indeed, it was the longest line and biggest crowd I've encountered during my frequent flights. After waiting for nearly an hour and seeing several passengers become rather unruly as departure times came and went, I finally made it to the front of the line. Here, two security officers were checking passports. They were happily chit-chatting with one another, cracking jokes and laughing heartily despite an impatient crowd. The officer took my passport, then turned to her colleague to continue her conversation. After no more than 20 seconds, she turned around and gave me back my passports with the words, "Thank you, sir." To my amazement, she had not even cracked it open. Apparently, the outside jacket of my passport clearly showed who I was and that I represented no security threat. Tales of airport security, ladies and gentlemen. It's oh so copyrighted.
Things I never knew as I fall into you. I used to be so sad and blue, but now I fall into you.
I fall into you.
This is Le Show from the Edge of America. Dan Koster. According to the Associated Press, Dan Koster was unpacking some of his more than 2,000 CDs after a move when he noticed something strange. Some of the discs, which he always took good care of, wouldn't play properly. Koster took one that was skipping pretty badly and held it up to the light. I was kind of shocked to see a constellation of pinpricks, little points where the light was coming through the aluminum layer, he says. His collection was suffering from, see if this rings a bell to longtime Le Show listeners, CD rot. It's not a name of a guy. It's a gradual deterioration of the data-carrying layer. It's not known for sure how common the blight is, but it's one of a number of reasons that optical discs, including DVDs, may be a lot less long-lived than first thought. We were all told CDs were well-nigh indestructible when they were introduced, Koster says. He went through his collection and found that 15 to 20% of the discs were rotted to some extent. The rotting can be due to poor manufacturing, according to Jerry Hartke, who runs a laboratory that tests CDs. The aluminum layer that reflects the light of the player's laser is separated from the CD label by a thin layer of lacquer. If the manufacturer applied the lacquer improperly, air can penetrate to oxidize the aluminum. But in Hartke's view, it's more common that discs are rendered unreadable by poor handling by the owner. If people treat these discs harshly, or stack them, or allow them to rub against each other, this very fragile protective layer can be disturbed, allowing the atmosphere to interact with that aluminum, he says. Unquote. They're more delicate than vinyl, it turns out. Who knew? That's why they're more expensive. They're more fragile. Part of the problem is that most people believe it's the clear underside of the CD that's fragile, when in fact it's the side with the label. Scratches on the underside have to be fairly deep to cause skipping, while scratches on the top can easily penetrate to the aluminum layer. Even the pressure of a pen on the label side can dent the aluminum, rendering the CD unreadable. An information technology specialist at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, Fred Byers, has looked at rewritable CDs, the ones we can make in our homes, on behalf of the Library of Congress, that need to know how long their discs are going to last. Manufacturers say lifespans will extend up to 100 years, but Byers says without a standardized test, it's very hard to evaluate their claims. The worst part is that manufacturers frequently change the materials and manufacturing methods without notifying users. When you go to a store and buy a DVD-R or CD-R, you don't really know what you're getting. If you buy a particular brand of disc and then get the same disc and brand 6 months later, it can be very different, he says. DVDs are a bit tougher than CDs because the data layer is sandwiched between two layers of plastic, but this structure causes problems of its own. The glue that holds the layers together can lose its grip. Users that bend a DVD to remove it from a hard gripping case are practically begging for this problem, because flexing the disc puts strain on the glue. For maximum longevity, discs should be stored vertically and handled only by the edges. Don't stick labels on them, and don't write on them with anything but soft water-based or alcohol-based markers. Also, like wine, discs should be stored in a cool, dry place. So now we know what they meant by virtually indestructible, ladies and gentlemen. CD rot is back. I missed it. I missed those stories for those seven years while it wasn't being talked about. Some media news. There'll be a new Fox cable channel by the end of 2004. Rupert Murdoch said at a recent meeting, they're studying additional spinoffs for 2005 and beyond. The company is considering a business, entertainment, or sports channel. Other possibilities? Weather, Hispanic, and a reality channel. Murdoch said the company is looking at a number of genres that would be natural extensions of the Fox brand. I got a couple of ideas. But instead, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
Sorry.
Did anybody say the All Jerk channel? I didn't. The Energy Daily, a Washington newsletter that covers the gas and electric industry, shocked some of its readers last week by printing obscenity-laced transcripts of Enron traders bragging about driving up prices as a way to steal millions from, quote, those poor grandmothers in California, unquote, during the state's energy crisis a few years ago. Employing a common expletive for sexual behavior in its first paragraph, the story also quotes one Enron official as saying, the best thing for California would be an earthquake. Let the thing float out to the Pacific and give them expletive candles. They should just bring back expletive horses and carriages, expletive lamps, expletive kerosene lamps, unquote. These transcripts are from recorded phone conversations and are in the hands of Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. After readers complained, Energy Daily publisher Llewellyn King ran a note apologizing if the Energy Daily has caused offense. Another apology from Mitsubishi. Japan's Mitsubishi Motors hid 26 defects in its cars from regulators for years, in addition to four problems it publicized in 2000, to avoid issuing recalls for the vehicles. The automaker said it would immediately start recalling the affected cars, most of them in Japan, nearly 200,000. A special investigative team the automaker set up last month as part of a new revival plan disclosed the additional problems. We apologize deeply for damaging public and consumer trust by failing to conduct recalls before and also for carrying them out now for problems rooted in the past, says Yoichiro Okazaki, the president of revivalist Mitsubishi Motors. John Kerry's presidential campaign staff is investigating how photos of South Texas war veterans were obtained for a television commercial in possible violation of copyright laws. The commercial featured 16 photos, including 15 that appeared in a book called South Texas Heroes, published by a local Texas newspaper in honor of local veterans. Two veterans and relatives of six others said the photos in the ad could only have come from South Texas Heroes because they have the only other copies, and the man who made the commercial never contacted them. The Kerry campaign on Thursday contacted at least one veteran who did not give permission to use his photo. The campaign was apologizing by phone to other veterans or their family members who were upset about being included in the ad. Days before Orange High School's, this is in North Carolina, Orange High School's graduation, Keith Cook said he wrote a speech in his own words that was influenced by the gravity of our times and the harsh realities of life. The Orange County School Board chairman thought about giving that speech. He felt his words were too somber for such a happy occasion as graduation. What I needed to do was lighten up a little bit, Cook said. Now he's issued two letters of apology, one to the graduating class and one to the community for not giving that original speech. He instead used portions of a 1998 speech by former U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Donna Shalala he found on the Internet. He delivered it at the graduation ceremony without attributing it to the author. He says his actions were naive and wrong. Also down south, WRAL in Charlotte, newscasters attempting to air a phoned-in tornado report Friday afternoon accidentally aired audio of a man cursing out a telemarketer. The glitch happened when reporter Mike Charbonneau was expected to call in and describe the severe weather there, says Jim Hefner, the station's VP and general manager. Instead, they got another man, also named Mike. Who would have thunk it? Who'd called expecting to participate in a trivia contest, not knowing it had been preempted by the weather coverage. An audio technician asked, Mike, are you ready? Mike said he was. They put him on hold for a few moments, then patched in again, just as the wrong Mike, apparently juggling calls, was giving a telemarketer a piece of his mind. WRAL disconnected the call, but not before the offending word had spilled out. The station immediately apologized. Hefner said he planned to contact the Federal Communications Commission to report what happened. The wrong Mike also called the station to apologize. West Australian police have apologized to the U.S. Consulate and Notre Dame University, that's in Australia, not in the United States, over the alleged abuse of American university students by drunken off-duty police. This comes after an investigation was opened into six detectives. The police had reportedly been drinking at a nightclub before a fight broke out during which an officer had a tooth knocked out by an American student from a local university, also called Notre Dame. It's claimed that some of the angry police then tracked the student to a university dorm where several students were forced to kneel on the ground while being called Yankees and taunted about U.S. involvement in Iraq. So those were some Australian apples. And Germany's coalition partners, but junior coalition partners. These are not the big guys. These are the junior partners of the German governing coalition. The Greens apologized to Israel for accidentally issuing an election poster that features a peace demonstrator carrying a banner saying, "Victory to the Intifada." The party sent a letter of apology to Israel's ambassador to Germany, Shimon Stein, after it failed to recall all 5,000 blown-up photos of a London peace rally in which the slogan was visible. "We noticed the slogan and ordered a complete recall," the spokeswoman said. "Unfortunately, some had already been hung up before the order got through, so we couldn't get them all." She said the Greens, you can't take them down once they're hung up? That's good glue. That's not like that CD glue. She said the Greens had also withdrawn an unspecified number of flyers featuring another photograph where a banner calling for a boycott of Israel could be seen. The material was conceived as a part of the Greens campaign for the June 13th European parliamentary elections. Nice people doing nice things all over the world, ladies and gentlemen. The apologies of the week. Oh, so copyrighted for your listening pleasure.
I'm overworked, underpaid, underloved and overlaid. Oh me, oh me, oh my, I'm just an average kind of guy. I hate my job and I hate my wife. I hate my house and I hate my life. I love to drink and I love to play, to make love each and every day. Love, I'm overworked, underpaid, underloved and overlaid. Oh me, oh me, oh my, I'm just an average kind of guy. I love my kids and I hate my bills. I'm low on luck and I'm high on pills. I love to rock and I love to roll. This world outside is just too damn cold. I'm overworked, underpaid, underloved and overlaid. Oh me, oh me, oh my, I'm just an average kind of guy. How soon tomorrow's here? I turn around and it's next year. I hate the way that they raise the rent, the landlord and the president. I'm overworked, underpaid, underloved and overlaid. Oh me, oh me, oh my, average kind of guy. I hate the way I stay in debt. I love the girls that I can't get. Dollar now ain't worth a dime, but I'm too scared to plan a crime. I'm overworked, underpaid, underloved and overlaid. Oh me, oh me, oh my, I'm just an average kind of guy. Oh me, oh my, oh I'm just an average kind of guy.
Today, George Tenet, the director of the CIA, submitted a letter of resignation. He's done a superb job.
Uh-oh. That's a locution that President Bush is utilizing more and more often these days. He said it recently of Donald Rumsfeld. So given what happened to George Tenet this week, if I was Don Rumsfeld, I wouldn't be getting those long-term magazine subscriptions sent to his Washington address. I don't know. Doing a superb job is, I guess it's like the modern version of I'm behind him 1,000%. Did I dream that James Watt was in the Reagan cabinet? Yes, George Tenet, the director of the CIA, dropped that other shoe this week, saying he was resigning for personal reasons. Guess who he wants to spend more time with, ladies and gentlemen? His family. And his deputy for operations. No, not those kind. Spy kind. They don't do surgery at this. Well, maybe they do. Maybe they do botched surgery at the CIA as well. By the way, just in the orgy we're going through here of remembrance, wasn't it the CIA that massively overstated the strength of the Soviet economy during the 80s, misjudging their fragility, much like CDs? Yes, it was. The answer to my own question, yes, it was. Anyway, George Tenet is out. There are several reports pending from Congress and the 9/11 Commission, reputed to be extremely critical of the CIA. So he got out while the getting was bad. And also in the president's life this week, it was announced the president had consulted a Washington, D.C. criminal defense attorney, James Sharp, in connection with the continuing, ongoing investigation of the leak by somebody of the identity of a CIA operative who was married to a former ambassador who had been so bold as to criticize, well, so bold as to say, hey, I investigated the story about Saddam Hussein trying to buy uranium from Niger, and it didn't happen. That woman, that probe. So the president has consulted with Attorney James Sharp. Vice President Cheney has also sought legal counsel. Nah, it's nothing. Might be worth a phone call.
I'll get it, Bar, while you see what's happening with the lobsters. Yellow.
Hey, 41, forget about the lobsters for a second. A little thing called your son on the line from France, of all places. I'm parlez-vooing with all the parlez-vooers.
Yeah, 43 was worried about you.
Hey, listen, don't you worry about me. Yeah. Worry about the people who don't have the Lord's wind up their backs.
I suppose so. Yeah. Still and all, if I'd had economic numbers like you did this week, can't imagine my poll numbers would be down in doo-doo town. So, of course, a father worries.
Yeah, 43, over here on a very solemn purpose, part of which is to be seen over here on a solemn purpose. So, especially on the 60th anniversary of D-Day year, I'm not going to be wasting my time reading polls. You know that.
No, you're having them read to you.
Well, whoever's reading whatsoever to me, that's not what my focus is focused on.
Mm.
You know, had that meeting with the Pope.
And weren't able to get him to softball his criticism of the war, huh? Yeah. It's too bad. Well,
look, it's no secret. He's not exactly going to be first in line at rapture time anyhow. But, you know, it's bad enough to have to hear this revered leader of the world's Catholic people just parrot the line of those who hate freedom, you know,
Like a parrot.
Yeah, but, you know, like a real tired parrot. I mean, he reads it so slow, like he's just dragging it out.
Well, Sprout, he's got Parkinson's disease.
Well, exactly the point I had in my heart and mind. You'd think he'd want to, you know, kind of hurry through the unpleasantness so he could get back to bed sooner. I mean, It had to be worse for him than for me. You know, I just had to sit there and think positive thoughts, like, hey, how about that new Iraqi government that we're give them their own sovereignty back over to.
Well, your Ambassador Blackwell sure must have knocked a few heads together over there.
Yeah, I'll tell you what really brought the Sunnis and the Shiitakes together was them all getting dents off Blackie's elbows for the past couple of weeks. But they tell me I got a feeling this is a government we can work with.
Mr. Brahim, the UN sort of put a good face on being Charlie Brown.
Yeah, we sort of moved the football on him.
Yeah, fortunately, the dark blue suit does hide the grass stains.
Yeah. The grass stains are from what again?
From trying to kick the football and falling down because it's been moved away.
Yeah. Talk about that. You should see this comic strip. That happens all the time.
So, how's Mr. Chirac treating you?
Well, see, here's the thing about the French. And, you know, I've been here for a couple of days now. I'm
mm-hmm.
getting some perspective on these people. They're proud, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, too proud. But they'll get in your face and everything. But if you stand toe-to-nose with them, they may make a big show of looking down on you. But deep down, they really respect you and they're looking up to you.
He's not sending troops to Iraq, is he?
Not quite that much respect.
Gotcha.
I think he got a little ticked off about Colin's speech comparing this war to the D-Day war.
Oh, that was a good speech.
Well, Jockey Shock thought it was a shot at him.
Because?
Because in World War II, they were collaborators with the enemy, so maybe we were saying that that's what they were this time.
And
we were, but, you know, for every good thing like that Colin does, then he goes and leaks to some author or reporter about how he's not really part of this team.
Hey, Sprout, you know this by now. Everybody leaks. Your guys used to be so good at leaking first and leaking better. Fatigue setting in?
Carl Rove literally had a fit when he heard Colin was going to go on MTV and, you know, say how much he liked the hippity-hop music. So
look, heard you were thinking of hiring this lawyer Sharp.
Yeah, I heard he was a sharp fella.
Mm-hmm. Well, you want to be careful about getting lawyered up.
A little late for that advice, 41. You know, this leak investigation has started to get serious.
Mm-hmm.
And already I haven't been around this many lawyers since my second bankruptcy. But Z-Man...
Gonzalez?
My White House lawyer. He advised me to see a private lawyer to get his advice.
His advice about?
About whether I need a private lawyer.
Hmm. So what did he say?
He said to go see Sharp.
What did Sharp say? What was Sharp's advice?
His advice was that I needed his advice.
Guess he'd tell you if he didn't think you needed it.
Well, sir, if Dick Cheney's getting lawyered up, that's good enough for me. The guy hasn't steered me wrong yet.
Uh-huh. Well, 43 got my hands full with the lobsters here. No, you've got your hands full with the French, so...
Yeah, well, look, even the Oak Ridge boys have to clear their throat. You saw we tied a rock to Georgie T's tail.
Didn't want to bring it up, and don't like to say told you so, but been saying for almost a year the company will take a lot of the heat, but it won't take it all.
Hey, I love the guy. He was a great, strong presence at those briefings first thing in the morning, you know? He'd bring his little Greek pastries with him most mornings. I almost wish I had him brief me that summer back in Crawford back in 2001, you know? That would have made those days complete, but... Like, I just wondered if, you know, as a former head of the company yourself, whether...
Nope, not gonna do it. Too happy being retired. Bass are biting this year.
I'm not talking about you replacing him, 41.
You're not?
I'm just wondering if you had any advice you might want to import about who should.
Look, Sprout, really am out of the loop these days. Never thought I'd say that. But just to give you an overview, the company's confidence is shaken. Anybody you appoint who's seen as just another fall guy is going to preside over the disintegration of this institution that I love and that you need.
Well,
my goodness, just imagine if you'd listened to them about Chalabi where you'd be today.
Oh, I'll tell you where, 41. 25 million Iraqis would still be living under a brutal tyrant is where. No, sir. Georgie T. had dirt on Mr. Chalabi. Mr. Chalabi had dirt on some folks back home, and none of this was going to build one single solitary Iraqi Krispy Kreme outlet, so...
Well, look. Have Condi get you what's called Dossier 224.
Okay. Who is this Dossier fella? Sounds French.
It's a file. Should have the company's own evaluation of all possible successors. It's maintained by a B team at all times. Your best bets are in there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and Dossier is one of them, is what you're saying?
Yeah, he's one of them. So look, Sprout saw your statement about Reagan. Very good. Almost Reagan-esque.
Almost. Well, sir, coming from you, 41, I'm going to take that as a compliment. Thanks for the heads up. Tell Mom to save a lobster for me.
Will do.
Not really, because, you know, I'm over here, but...
Yeah, gotcha. Good luck with our European friends.
Yeah, thanks. Mm. Got to have a word with Don Rumsfeld, though. It all looks pretty old over here.
Sure does. You take care, 43.
You too, 41.
I'm like a stranger. I'm like a stranger in my own hometown. I'm like a stranger. Stranger in my own hometown. Some folks I've known since my childhood just don't seem to want me around. I came home with good intentions about 5 or 6 years ago. I came home with good intentions about 5 or 6 years ago. But my hometown won't accept me. Just don't feel welcome here no more. I'm a family man. I work hard in my kind of business to do the very best I can. And I don't mistreat nobody. They'll lie if they say I do. Oh, there are some here that like me, but they're so very, very few. That's why I feel like a stranger. Stranger in my own hometown. My so-called friends stop being friendly, but you can't keep a good man down. No, you can't keep him down.
Ladies and gentlemen, finally in today's broadcast, news of the digital wonderland. In the same week that the New York Times technology writer David Pogue talked about the advent of an all HD TV world, a world in which all of our channels will be high-definition digital. Leaders of the House Commerce Committee heaped praise on the FCC's plan to speed up the digital TV transition. The committee's chairman, Joe Barton of Texas, said government spectrum needs trumped the prospect of ubiquitous high-definition TV. This is about the FCC's redefining the goal of 85% of the people having digital TV before they can turn off the analog signals and resell the frequencies. If we wait for 85% of the consumers to have digital equipment in their homes, we could be waiting until 2050 or beyond, said FCC Media Bureau Chief Ken Faree. telling lawmakers the FCC must be proactive in defining that 85%. Barton was supportive of the FCC's plan to use a portion of the proceeds from analog channel auctions to pay to supply analog households with a digital to analog converter that would keep their old sets functioning. Anything. But new services trump that need for HDTV, ladies and gentlemen. I warned you. I've been telling you. That and CD, you know I've been telling you about that. Anyway, that's the end of this week's analog edition of Le Show, although it's heard digitally in some areas. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe. That's digital. USN 440 cable system in Japan. That's digital. Around the world through the American Forces Network. I don't know. Up and down the east coast of North America on the analogly giant shortwave signal of WBCQ, the planet. Around the world via the internet. That's Oso Digital. On your computer at two different locations, live and archived anytime you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, and available as a free digital download at audible.com/LeShow. And it would be just like me not having dreamed all that if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty. Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show playlists always available at the newly refurbished harryshearer.com. Thanks to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks for their contributions to today's broadcast. Oh, there's a period at the end of that. I was doing NPR inflections there for a minute. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.